All right, so we are holding on page Mem Tes in Brachas, middle of Os Samach Tes, the third line of page Mem Tes. We've been discussing the question of whether the Mesim know what's going on in our world. We started with the Reb Chiya and Reb Yonis in discussing that point, and Reb Chiya explaining that the Pasuk V'Hamesim Einim Yodim Me'uma doesn't mean that the dead don't know what's going on in this world. It means that it's talking about the Rishayim. So then we have a long story about the Chassid Echad and going and sleeping in the Beis HaKvaris and the two girls chatting with each other, etc. So now the Gemara says, so the Gemara said it's still not a proof from that, because we could say that maybe this that they were saying, that the girl says now on private conversations have become public knowledge in the world of the living, maybe they're because somebody else meanwhile passed away and told. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. Did Ze'iri have a mafkid zuze legabe ushbezichte? Ze'iri had money deposited for safekeeping with the woman that he boarded by. Ushbezichna, within the masculine, would be a male innkeeper. Ushbezichte is a female. So she was a girl or a young woman who ran the inn or whatever where Ze'iri stayed. Abda Osul Ozul Beirab. Meanwhile, Ze'iri went away to the yeshiva to learn, and by the time he came back, Shchiva, then this Ushpizichte had passed away. And now he didn't know where she had put the money. Ozul Basra Lachatsar Mobis. So he followed her to Chatsar Mobis. Now, Rashi explains it means the actual Beis HaKvaris. So he literally went to the Beis HaKvaris to talk with her. And here you have what we discussed yesterday, what the Ritva says, and Akosev and Marsha, that maybe it's not necessarily that they went there physically, but rather that they used a dream that they used a shela scholem basically to find out in their dream. There are in fact Mephoshim who say that anyway Chatzar Mavis over here can't be the cemetery for other reasons anyway. In particular, the next story that we're going to have in the Gemara involves Shmuel going to Chatzar Mavis, and we know from other Gemaras that Shmuel is a kohen, so he's not allowed to go to an actual cemetery. So therefore, that's a reason to say different achronim talk about that Chatzar Mavis over here may not mean the actual Beis HaKvaris. Whatever the case, so Ze'iri went to find out, to talk to her. Omer lo zuzehecha, he asks her, where's the money? Omer lo, she tells him, zil shaklinu mitusik sinur de dosha v'duch plan. Go take them from under the hinge pin of the door that's in such and such a place. Doors in those days, the hinges of them weren't like they have side-mounted hinges like they have now. They were more like Lego doors where they have pins on top and bottom that fit into sockets in the ground, in the threshold, and in the lintel of the door frame. So there'd be a hole over there where it was large enough to deposit money in. So in this case, she's saying that's where I deposited it. Hello? So she says, go look under the hinge pin of the door in such and such a place, and you'll find the money. Which, by the way, la halacha, then that may not be la halacha for other purposes in halacha, that may not be valid. There's a Gemara elsewhere that says, for example, that if a person has a dream where his father comes and tells him that you should know the money in such and such a place belongs to Pliny or belongs to or is Maisa Sheni money, not necessarily do we have to go according to that. Because we say, Divrei Chalom is Lemalim Vlemeridim. A Cholom can always have something false in it, and you never know, therefore, whether that's a true detail or not. So, Bepashtus, what it would mean is, Al Pi Alacha, if Ze'iri had gone to her heirs and said, your mother came to me, your mother told me when I went to Chatzar Mavis that the money is in such a place, they would have the right, Al Pi Alacha, to tell him, we don't have to follow that. But over here, apparently, the idea is that she's telling him himself what he did with that information. The Gemara doesn't record. And by the way, she says to Ze'iri while he's talking with her, the Ema lo le'ima, also please tell my mother to shadrili masrikoi v'gubsai v'kuchla, please send me my comb and my crew of eyeshadow, bahadi plonisa da'asi l'macher, together with such and such a woman who's going to be coming here to the Olam Emes tomorrow. So why would she say such a thing? So Rashi says this woman that Ze'iri is talking to over here herself had passed away young. So she's saying as a matter of agmas nefesh, like I never really had the chance to enjoy life. So therefore, please send me, like so to speak, she's saying like here in the Olam Emes, I still want my comb and I still want my eyeshadow in order to make myself up and look beautiful. So there is in fact a Musa de Kavart, they say, on that. In fact, what a person lives for in this world, what a person considers important in this world, is to a certain extent what they end up considering important in the next world, even though objectively it's not really very important at all. But that's they lived for that in this world, and therefore, like, that's what they take with them to the Olam Ha'emes. There's actually a Siddur story in that connection, something along the lines of this very simple balagola. I don't remember the exact details, but I think he saved the tzaddik's life or something, whatever it was. Anyway, after 120, he's in front of the base in Shamaila. What are they supposed to do with him? He's not a keli to go to Gan Eden. He hasn't really accomplished yet. He's not really, if he goes there to enjoy Zivashkina, he's not going to get anything out of it. On the other hand, you can't very well send him to the other place. So they decided essentially that his reward will be that on an ongoing basis he was a balagola during his lifetime. You always have to deal with a balagola. You have to deal with horses that won't cooperate, roads that are potholed or curvy or whatever. So like this, they'll have him the best horses, the best road, the best everything, and that'll be his reward in Gan Eden, that he's sitting over there in the driver's seat and driving like that. Until eventually the upshot of the story is that there were some tzaddikim who had known the guy while he was alive, and they realized, you know what, that won't do. The fact is, we got to do something, we got to accomplish something for him. So they were able to be poil on the base in Shamaila to let the guy go for a spell in Gehenna in order to realize what he's missing, and then to be cleaned up, and then to be able to be made a keli for Olam Haba. So in a certain sense, you have the same kind of thing with this girl over here when she's asking after she's passed away, it's my comb and my tomb of eyeshadow. A mess should care about that, but like that's to a certain extent what she lived for. Well, to a certain extent, that's what she lived for in this world, and therefore that's to her, even in the Olam Ha'emes, like that's considered the ultimate thing. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Alma Yadi. So now you see from this story that the Mason know, because she's saying that I know that this other woman is going to pass away tomorrow, and therefore tell her, please, to send my stuff with her. So doesn't that show that the Mason know what's going on in our world? The Gemara says, that's not a proof, because Duma Kodim Machiz Lahu. Because it's possible that Duma, who is the Malach in charge of the Neshamas, maybe Malach HaMuna al Mason, now she says, maybe he goes and announces ahead of time, Kodim HaMach Lahu, he goes and announces in Shemayim that so-and-so is going to be coming here tomorrow. So that way she knows. Not necessarily, in other words, if this other woman was going to pass away in a week or a month or whatever, not necessarily would she know that. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. Davur de Shmuel habakam machkede gabe zuza de yasmi. Shmuel's father, and throughout Shas, even though the Gemara is going to say soon, he actually had a name. His name was Abba Bar Abba. But throughout Shas, almost universally, he's called Avur de Shmuel. There's a little story in that regard. That the Gaonim tell where one time he was away on a business trip. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He's quoted many times in the Gemara in things of Halacha. But he was also a businessman. So one time he's away on a trip. While he's away, he meets up with this goyish woman who propositions him. She knew Kishuf, and she knew with her Kishuf or her stargazing or whatever it is, that night he is destined to father somebody who's going to grow up to be a very great person. And she wanted to be the mother of that child. So she propositioned him to be Mizana with her. He wasn't interested, so he used the shame of Hashem, but he's still, you know, if she's saying that, there is mistama some truth to what she's saying. So he used the shame of Hashem to transport himself, Fitzaderech, back home that night. He had relations with his wife, then he left to continue on his trip. So his wife became pregnant. When a few months later she starts showing the local Beistin, what's going on? Her husband has been away for months. They didn't know he was back home for that one night. They figured, Mastama, fishy business going on over here. So they brought her to Beis Din and gave her Malchus. In fact, she's going to say it was my husband. So what? You know, any woman as Mazana is going to say it's my husband. That's not a proof. They had enough evidence. They thought to, in fact, Shmuel himself says in the story that the Goyim tell, Shmuel himself says many years later, I was in the womb. I could actually feel the patch on my head. Anyway, the upshot was that he survived and she survived. Eventually the baby was born. Eventually, Avur de Shmuel came back home and the whole story came out. And he told them what happened. So from then on, and eventually Shmuel grew up to be the great Amor de Shmuel. So everybody realized, of course, you know, can't possibly be that there was Nus involved over here. So from then on, they called the father Avur de Shmuel in token of, we recognize that Itaka is Shmuel's father and not like we unjustly suspected his mother. Anyway, that's, It's just the Gaonim tell the story. The Gaonim tell the story. They had it, evidently, the Gaonim, after all, are the successors of the Amoraim in the Yeshivas of Babel. So apparently they had it as a tradition that was passed down from generation to generation among the Chachamim. Apparently, if they have strong enough, it's called Raglayim Modover. If you see a woman is pregnant and she's a married woman, and as far as we know, her husband hasn't been around in months, then yeah, you know. Anyway. So, Avur de Shmuel, Habakkuk Mafkadei Gabe Zuza de Yasmi. There was money of Yisoyim deposited with him for safekeeping. Now, Kinoch Nafshe, now when Avur de Shmuel passed away, Loi Haba Shmuel Gabe. Shmuel was not there. So therefore, his father was not able to tell him where the money is. Eventually, so now what happens? The Yisoyim are coming to ask for their money, and Shmuel has to tell them, I don't know where it is. Well, unfortunately, people jump to conclusions. People started calling Shmuel the son who eats the money of Yisoyim. Like, in other words, they, again, you know, I guess just like in the previous generation, they were choshed his mother unjustly. Now they're choshed him. That why is he not giving the money back to the Yisoyim? Must be because he's keeping it for himself. Shmuel's in a bad situation. So he went to follow his father to Chatzar Moves to talk to him. So again, Rashi had said before Chatzar Moves means the Beis HaKvaris. There are Achronim who explain that maybe it doesn't mean literally, but even if we say it's the Beis HaKvaris, we have the explanation that we said yesterday from Hakosev and Marsha that this may have all been that in a dream he perceives himself going to the Beis HaKvaris. Anyway. In fact, we said just before you walked in, Shmuel himself was a Kohen, we find in other Gemaras, so he certainly can't have gone to an actual physical Beis HaKvaris. Therefore, that shows that either that's a strong proof that either Chatzar Moves over here doesn't mean a Beis HaKvaris, or that he did, but he perceived himself doing it in a dream. Anyway, whatever the case, Omalahu, so he starts speaking to the Malachim in charge over there, or Be'ina Abba, I need to speak to Abba. Now, Abba doesn't just mean Tati, Abba is his actual father, is his father's actual personal name. So, Omalahu, Tuva Abba Ikahocha, they tell him there's lots of people here named Abba. Omalahu, so he says, Be'ina Abba Bar Abba, I need to speak to Abba Bar Abba, because his grandfather's name was also Abba. Omalahu, Tuva Abba Bar Abba, Nami Tuva Ikahocha, there's lots of Abba Bar Abbas over here also, be specific. Omalahu, so he tells them, Ba'ina Abba Bar Abba Avur de Shmuel Hecha. I need Abba Bar Abba, the father of Shmuel, where is he? Oh, okay, now they have a positive identification. Omalahu, so they told him, Solik from Masivta Dirkiya. So the Mesim over there, or the Malachim over there, in Chatzai Mavas, tell him that he's gone up to the Masivta Dirkiya. His Neshama is not here, down on earth anymore, it's up in the Yeshiva Shalmaiva. Yeah, well. And so the simple people who are buried over there are not necessarily going to be in the Sifta Dirakia. They have, I mean, they go to some level of Gan Eden, but not necessarily the level that's called the Sifta Dirakia. So if you want to find your father, that's where you'll find him. So Shmuel's going to do an Aliyah Seneshama to go up to the Sifta Dirakia to talk with his father. Adahochi, as he was on his way there, Chazir the Levi de Yosef Avroy. He saw Levi. Levi was one of the Talmidim of Rebbe. He's one of those people who belongs to that transitional generation between the Tanoim and Amoraim. To a certain extent, he's considered a Tana. To a certain extent, he's considered an Amor. His full name was Levi Bar Sisi. Anyway, so we find him all over Shas. We have a lot of times we find him arguing with Rab or with Shmuel. We have sometimes conversations between him and Rebbe. We have all kinds of things. There's even actually a particular story with him where one time, worth telling the story now, one time the Medrash says the people of a town called Simonia came to Rebbe and they said, we need a Kli Kodesh in our community. We need somebody to help raise up the Ruchniistic level of our community. Now we need a lot of different things. We need a Rav, we need a Malamed, we need a Darshan, and so forth. The problem is we're poor. We can't afford to have a bunch of different Kli Kodesh. So we want you to pick one of your Talmidim who can fill all of those roles and send him to us. So Rebbe picks Levi and sends him there. He comes over there, they make for him this big platform in the middle of the street over there, and they're having a tremendous parade in his honor and all, and they're seating him on the platform, and okay, let's have the brother. Let's see how he fares as our new Rav. So they ask him a Shaila in Halacha, something I think in the Dinim of Yibol, and he didn't know the answer. Then they asked him something else in Halacha, and again, he couldn't think of the answer. So they thought, okay, maybe Halacha is not his strong point, maybe Agadta. So they asked him something like Agadta, an explanation of a pasuk in Daniel. And still he didn't know it. send a message to Rebbe, what's going on? We asked you for somebody who can help our community, and you sent us. And Rebbe says, I don't understand. The one I sent you is of the same caliber as me, which is a pretty high compliment. But that Levi is of the caliber of Rebbe. Well, Rebbe says, okay, tell Levi to come back over here. Let me see what's going on over here. So Levi comes back and, of course, thoroughly humiliated. And Rebbe asks him, so tell me, that first question I asked you in Halacha, what's the din? And Levi right away knows the answer. And the second question also. And the third one, the one in Agadza also. So Rebbe tells him, so what's going on? How come here you know it right off the bat, and there in Simonia you didn't? And Levi says, Rebbe, when they put me on that big platform over there and they had this whole thing of covered for me, I became a little bit of a Balgai. And that caused me to forget everything. And then Rebbe said, you're right. There's actually a pasuk in Mishlei that expresses that idea in Zamosa Yod Lefeh. So I don't think the Medrash tells the end of the story, whether he ended up sending him back there, but told him not to make this big to do about it, or whether in the end he didn't go back there, but actually, yeah, that's the story. Anyway, so now Shmuel, having gone up to the Yeshiva Shalmaila, to talk to his father, he sees Levi de Yosef Avroi, that he's sitting outside the Yeshiva Shalmaila. Omalei, so he asks him, "Amai Yisiva Sabroi? Why are you sitting outside the Masifta Derekia, the Yeshiva Shomayla? My time is Salkas. How come you're not going up and into the Yeshiva?" Omalei, so Levi tells him, "De Amri Li, because they told me here in Shemayim, Kol Kihanach Shnid Le Salkas Le Masifta Derek Office for it, the equivalent number of all the years that you did not go into the Masifta of Rav Office for Achlishta Le Daite, and thereby you made him feel bad." It corresponding to that, for the same corresponding number of years, we are not going to allow you into the Masivta Derukia. So the story behind that is in the Gemara in Ksubas. We had it in Daf Yomi a few weeks back. Before Rebbe passed away, he gave instructions who's going to fill the different roles. One of them was, he said that Rav Hanina Bar Chama should be the next Rosh Hashiva. Now the Gemara says there, Rav Hanina did not want to accept the position because Rav Office was older. So he resigned the position in favor of Rav Office. Now Rav Hanina then did not go to learn inside the Beis Medrash because it wouldn't be right. He is after all of a higher caliber Talmid Chacham than Rav Office. So he doesn't belong sitting as one of the Talmidim of Rav Office inside the Beis Medrash. Levi also decided to join Rav Hanina and be as Chavrusa there sitting outside the Beis Medrash. Eventually Rav Office passed away. Rav Hanina got the job of Rosh Hashiva after all, and Levi at that point left Eretz Yisrael and moved to Babel. So now what we're saying is, so the Gemara says, so it comes out from the Gemara over there, the fact that Rav Hanina didn't go join Rav Office in the Beis Medrash is not so bad. Because yeah, it is true he is a higher caliber Talmid Chacham than Rav Office. That's why, after all, Rebbe was going to give him the position in the first place. So therefore, if he's not becoming Rav Office's Talmid, then it's not that big a deal. But that Levi, who was of the caliber to be a Talmid of Rav Office, that he shouldn't, that hurt Rav Office, that he shouldn't have such a star Talmid as one of his Talmidim. So therefore, now many years later, after Levi has passed away, they told him that is for the same number of years that you caused Rav Office to feel bad by not being a member of his Beis Medrash, for the same number of years you're going to be excluded from the Masivta Derukia. So
say why Levi didn't want to go.
The Pashtus, the reason is because Levi figured he'll do better as a Chavrusa of Rav Hanina. No, that's afterwards. Rav Hanina later on became the Rosh Hashiva. When Rav Hanina became the Rosh Hashiva, then Levi moved to Babel. Because now he didn't have anybody. So now, he hadn't been a Talmud of Rav Office all the years. Now Rav Office is gone. Rav Hanina is already close enough to him in caliber that he's not going to be a Talmud of Rav Hanina. Until now they've been Chavrusas. He's not going to all of a sudden now become his Talmud. So therefore he figured there's nothing better than for him to move to Babel. But the point is that why didn't he go and learn by Rav Office all the years? So they held that against him in Shemai. Ad-hoki-bohoki, as they were talking, as Shmuel and Levi were talking, Shmuel's father came along. Chazid have a kabochi va'achich. Shmuel saw that his father, again, this is after his father had passed away, his father was also already in Olam Amos. He sees that he's crying and laughing, or smiling. Omele, my time of kabochis. So Shmuel asks him, why are you crying? Because soon you are going to be joining us. not how soon is soon. It's not necessarily like the next day or something, but Avraham Shmuel is saying, I'm sad over the fact that very soon, relatively speaking, you are going to be joining us in the Olam Haba. He asks him, my time achitas. So why are you smiling? Why are you happy on the other hand? So Avraham Shmuel tells him, the Hashivas Bahai Alma Tova, because you are very important in this world. Now, which world do we mean? Rashi says it means that he means that Shmuel is important in our world, in the world of the living, in the world of the Shamas and Gufin, which is what the Gemara is going to try to prove then. So we see the Mason know what's going on in the world of the living. That's what the whole sugya has been on this question, whether the Mason know what's going on in the world of the living. So according to that, then we have a proof that yes, because I've heard Shmuel is saying, I'm very happy that you, Shmuel, are important in the world of the living.
But this whole conversation is happening up there.
It's happening up there, yeah. So on the other hand, Tosfa says that no, it means that he's saying that you're very important in this world, meaning in the world that we're in, the world that we're standing in now and talking, the world of Neshamas in Gan Eden, then you are considered very important. So either way, he's saying that's what I'm happy about. Amale, so the first thing Shmuel does is if I'm so important, let me use my chashivas to help another yid. He says, I chashivna, if I'm really that important, nailuhu the Levi. Then let me use a little protectia over here and get Levi into the Yeshiva Shabbat. Sure enough. What?
First thing he wanted to do,
yeah.
First thing he wanted to do
is help another yid, yeah. Yeah, by Lua the Levi, so sure enough, they allowed Levi into the Yeshiva Shalmaila. They suspended his punishment, and he's allowed into the Yeshiva Shalmaila. Now, Omele, so Shmuel says to his father, the whole reason I came over here is because you zilzed the Yasmehesa. Where's that money of the Yasomim, which everybody is harassing me about and claiming that I stole it myself? Omele, so Avraham de Shmuel tells him, Zil Shaklinu Ba'amsa Derechaya. Go get them. You'll find them under the frame of the millstones. So you have those millstones, two stones, one on top of the other, where the bottom one is basically fixed in place. The top one rotates around it, and that's how you grind up grain. So there's a frame, there's a stand or a frame that you put the millstones on top of. That is called Amsa Derechai. So look over there, and you'll find it. And you'll find, he tells him, Eloi v'tatoi didon, you'll find there's three bags of money, one on top of the other. The top one and the bottom one belong to us. Umitsi, to me, and now to you and your brothers. Umitsi, the yasmi. The one in the middle belongs to the yasmi. Omele, my time, abdesofi. Rabbi Shmuel asks, why'd you do that? Why dafka is the yasmi's one in the middle? Omele, so he tells him, because I figured, I ganvi, if ganovim come to steal the money, nignivu midan, then the first one they'll find is the top bag of money, which is ours, so fine, let them take that one. Maybe once they take that one, they'll be satisfied, they're not going to go bother taking the next bag, and therefore the money of the assignment will be safe. I achwa ara, and if instead the soil causes it to go rusty, because coins are sitting on the ground, eventually the moisture comes up from the ground, so the coins can get rusty or moldy. So if that happens, achwa midan, then it'll affect our money rather than the Yisraelim's money. So in other words, this way, the Yisraelim's money sandwiched between two bags of our money will be as safe as possible. So the Gemara says, from this whole story, al magadi. So again, don't we see from this story that the Mason know what's going on in this world? According to Rashi's explanation, the point is that Avraham Shmuel knows that Shmuel is very important in our world, in Olam Hazeh. So that shows that he knows what's going on in Olam Hazeh. According to Tosfos' explanation, the fact that he says that La'agal Osis, that soon you're going to be coming over here, where the point is, it's one thing if it was going to be the next day or something, we said in the Gemara before, that Duma, the Malach, may announce it ahead of time. But over here, where it's not necessarily Shmuel is not going to be passing away that soon. So the fact that Avraham Shmuel knows shows that they know what's going on here on earth. So the Gemara answer is not necessarily Dilma Shiny Shmuel. Maybe in the case of Shmuel is different. Kivin the Choshev, because since he's important, Machtim Yom Machvazi Panu Mokim. Then they make an announcement before he comes, clear the way for him. So therefore, even if it's a week or a month or whatever it is before he's going to pass away, already Avraham Shmuel knows they're starting to make preparations to welcome him in the Olam Haba. So therefore. No, not of course. Beruchnius is no such thing, but you have in particular. So I think there is actually an explanation. First of all, sometimes there's an expression in the Gemara in Chagiga that says that every person starts out with a place in Gan Eden and a place in Gehenna. But then what happens is the Rosha ends up forfeiting his place in Gan Eden, and that place is given to a tzaddik. And the tzaddik doesn't need his place in Gehenna, and it's given to the Rosha. So therefore, like you have, so to speak, there are places in, not physical places, but in other words, places in terms of a mila in Ruchnius that are right now in use by one person, and they have to be, so to speak, cleared in order to make place for a higher level tzaddik. So that kind of announcement, they make in advance, and therefore, Avor D'Shmuel can know even more than, even not just 24 hours before, but a few days or a few weeks or whatever before, that they're starting to make preparations to welcome Shmuel. So that doesn't prove that he actually knows what's going on in the world of the living in Olam Hazeh, only what they announce in Olam Haba. So the Gemara says, the after of Yonas and Hodebei. Now in the end, we started the whole discussion with Rav Chiya and Rav Yonas discussing the question of whether the Mason know anything, where Rav Yonas was arguing they don't. After all, the Pasuk says, Kiyat Ba Mason Enim Yodim Ma'uma, and therefore what's the problem if our Titzis are dragging on the Kvarim, and Rav Chiya tells him it's not like that, Ba Mason Enim Yodim Ma'uma doesn't mean the Mason don't know. They know about things that affect them personally, and therefore when you have, when your Titzis are dragging on the graves, then it bothers them, and they're saying it's like you're making fun. So now the Gemara says, after Rav Yonasan Hodor Bei, Rav Yonasan himself ended up changing his mind and accepting that in fact the Mason do know what's going on here on earth. The Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer of Yonasan, Minayim the Mason Shemasakrim Zamzeh. How do we know that the Mason talk with one another and inform one another of what's going on in Olam Hazeh? So we have in the story before of the Chassid Echad, we have that because we have the two girls talking. Well, there it was Masakrim telling what's going on Me'achorei HaPavod. But here we're saying that in the other stories also, we have that people are passing away and telling the Mason what's about to happen in the world. Fine, but that was before we got to Rav Yonasan. That was after we dealt with Rav Yonasan. That was when we were dealing with the sons of Rav Chiya and their different opinions about what happens with the Mason. Here Marashah explains, we're going back to Rav Yonasan. And we didn't find so far anything Rav Yonasan saying any such thing. He just brought the pasuk Mason Enim Yodim Ma'uma, implying that the Mason don't know anything, even that they can't be informed by other Mason. So now we're saying he changed his mind and accepted that at least they can know things by hearing from other Mason. The Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yonasan, Minayim the Mason Shemasakim Zemzeh. How do we know that the Mason talk with one another, and therefore that when a person passes away, he can inform the Mason from earlier times of what's going on in the world at the time that he dies? Shenema, the Pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem Elov, Hashem says to Moshe, after he went up to Har Nevoi, Zois Haoretz Hashem Ishbati LaAvram Yitzchok LaYakob Leimer. This is the land that I swore to give to Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov, Leimer, to say. Now, what does the word lamer mean? My lamer. Usually, lamer means that I'm telling you this for you to go repeat to other people. But here, Moshe is standing alone on Har Nevoi. Who is he supposed to tell over to what he just saw? So it means, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Leith Emor Lahem LaAvram LeYitzchok LeYaakov, go tell Avram Yitzchok LeYaakov, Shvua Shenishbati Lochem, the Shvua that I made to you hundreds of years ago, Kvar Ki Yamtir Levneichem, I have already fulfilled it for your children. So that's the lamer. So Moshe is to go and tell the others that. Now, what does that mean, by the way? Marashah points out, when Moshe passed away, Eretz Yisrael proper had not been conquered yet. But since, Marashah says, since at that point, the lands of Sichon and Og had been conquered, and Hashem, which is already part of Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem had showed Moshe the entire Eretz Yisrael, which that alone made it then much easier that the Jewish people will be able to conquer it. Therefore, it's tantamount to saying that's already been fulfilled, even though in the event it took 7 years to conquer to conquer it, and they didn't even conquer the whole thing. There were still enclaves that were left, but basically it was already accomplished. So therefore, Moshe can now inform the others that Hashem's promise was in fact fulfilled. So, the Gemara says, V'isak da'itach de layadi. So if you're going to say the Mason don't know what's going on in the world, ki amaluhu mai habi. What's the difference whether Moshe tells them or not? If they don't know, they don't know. Obviously, the answer is that they must know. So the Gemara asks, elamai diyadi, well, fakir. If they do know what's going on in the world, lamalei lamei maluhu, then fakir. Why does Moshe need to tell them? Won't they know it on their own? And the answer is, you're right, they will know it on their own. But Hashem wanted that they should consider, they should have a reason to be grateful to Moshe that he gave them the news. Even though they know it on their own, they should have the chance to show appreciation to Moshe for telling them this good news. almost like a, yeah, like even though they know it, but there's actually, there's a story they tell in that regard involving, I think it's Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, where one time one of his Talmidim was in danger of being drafted into the Russian army with everything that entails. So then finally the news comes that he's been disqualified. So one Talmid after another rushes into his office to tell them, and each one he's effusively thanking them for the news. And after a while, one of the Talmidim asks him, you know, you've already heard the thing a dozen times. How he says, because you know, each one is coming in so excited to be able to tell me the news and to give me nachas ruach, why should I take that away from them? So I'll derech like you have over here, even if they obviously already know it, it's still, they would appreciate that Moshe tells them and having that Moshe wants to give them that extra nachas ruach and give him, and then give him thanks for that.
For all that Moshe made a difference for their descendants.
Yeah, for everything that he did for their descendants, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara tells, the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yitzchak, kol ha-misaper achar ha-mes, further in this connection, if a person speaks about the gnus, about something derogatory, something negative, after a person passed away, then it's as if you're talking after a stone. In other words, the same way as a stone doesn't care what you say about it, the same way the mess doesn't. So what does that mean? Some say that it means that they don't know the chlals, they don't perceive anything that you're saying. The ikadami diyadi ikbadu ikbasuhu. Others say they do know, but they're not makbid on it. They don't care. We're in the Olam HaEmes anyway. Whatever this guy is saying about us, it doesn't matter to us. So I'm going to ask Amy, is that so? Vaha amra papa. Didn't a papa say that one time somebody spoke in a derogatory way after Mar Shmuel passed away? The Nafal Kanya Mitlala, and then as the guy is standing over there, all of a sudden a big beam fell down from the ceiling, and then broke open his brain case, his skull. So we see now the Pashtos, what would we assume that Mar Shmuel himself heard whatever this guy said and was insulted by it, and therefore he got back at the guy. The answer is no. Shiny tzurvim et abanon. It's different with a young Talmid Chacham. It's not that the mess himself cared, but Hashem stands up on the Talmid Chacham's behalf to get back at somebody who speaks in a derogatory way about him. Why dafka? Interesting is that sometimes in the Gemara, Mar Shmuel means the Amor de Shmuel that we were just talking about before. One problem with that is, and why we call it Tzurvim and Abonim. Usually Tzurvim and Abonim means like a newly minted Talmid Chacham. There's places where it actually explains the word Tzurva literally means, it comes from a word that means Sigmi. Like Tzareva Sashrin Hi. So it's like a person who's only just started out as a Talmid Chacham. He's staying near the Talmid Chachamim, who are compared to fire, and he's gotten as if like he's gotten a little singed, like he's gotten a little bit affected by them, but he hasn't fully become one of the Chachamim himself. Shmuel is obviously not going to be described like that. So for Pashtus, I guess we would have to say that the Mar Shmuel over here is a different Amora. Which I guess also would make sense for a different reason, because Rav Papa himself was born long after Shmuel passed away. How is he reporting something that happened at Shmuel's Levaya? So we would have to say that it was Mar Shmuel who lived closer to his times. Anyway, why dafka this punishment? A couple of the Mephoshim talk about. One point is that a Talmid Chacham protects his generation like a roof protects a house, and therefore, very appropriately, he's speaking against the Talmid Chacham, therefore something falls off of the roof and then bops him on the head. Another point is also, Ben Yehoyada makes point that later on in the Masechta, when we have the whole thing in the ninth parak talking about dreams and the meanings of them, one thing is that it mentions over there that kanim, that reeds, are a metaphor for Torah. Like, as it says in the passage, knei chochma, knei bina, where the word knei, which means to acquire, is also related to the word kana, which means a reed. So therefore, that's why we're saying that a kanya, that a reed, meaning some kind of heavy stick, fell down and then brained the guy. So the Gemara continues on this in this vein. Amar Rabbi Shurban Levi, kol misaper acham tosin shadav ben chachamim noifu begehenem. Anybody who speaks negatively after the mitzvah of a Talmid Chacham, meaning that the mitzvah, the bier, the coffin that they're carrying out the Talmid Chacham to be buried, noifu begehenem. Such a person winds up in Gehenna. Now it falls into Gehenna. Ion Yaakov explains the word falls into Gehenna means he falls in there temporarily, but then, you know, a Yid B'chlal doesn't spend any, a regular Yid doesn't spend very much time in Gehenna because Avraham Avinu schleps him out of there right away because he has a bris milah. So that's why the expression no for Gehenna. Anyway, the point is that even though we're talking about it's after the Talmud Chacham passed away. So you could say, so Tosfos points out, if not like, it may like if he did it when the Talmud Chacham passed away, but while the Talmud Chacham was alive, then it can create machloikas. So therefore, that's a negative thing. But you would think after the Talmud Chacham has passed away, what's the difference? If he, whatever he says, nobody's gonna do anything anyway. But no, we're still saying no for Begehen, even then. Marashor also points out, before we said, Kolam Asapa Achraham Nes. Here we're talking about Talmud Chacham. We said before, Tzadikim, Afilu Mimisosan, Kurim Chayim. Therefore, we don't want to use the expression Acham Mitsosan, Shatamana Chachamim. Instead, we use the expression Acham Mitsosan, like as if, so to speak, they're just sleeping on a bed. They're not really dead. But there is, in fact, something in Otsar Gaonim, where in the Yeshivas in Babel, even though the Gemara had already been written by that by the time of the Gaonim, mostly they still learned Baal Peh. So one time the question came up and was asked to one of the Gaonim whether the proper Gersa over here is Mitot. Keep in mind also that Sardim pronounce a Tess and a Toph very similarly. So the question became whether, in fact, the word is mitosan with a test, or mitatan, meaning they're, like you would say, like modern Hebrew, that would be pronounced identical, mitatan, their bed, or mitatan, their death. And then the Goyen explained to them that it is supposed to be the test, like we have it over here in the Gemara. For the reason that Marashah is saying, because you don't talk about the Talmud Chachamim as dead, because I feel like mitosan Kurim Chai. Anyway, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, v'hamatim akokaloisam, those who turn to the crooked way. So Rashi explains the previous Pasuk in Tillim, it says, hey, tiva Hashem matoivim, Hashem, do good for those who do good. And then the Pasuk continues, v'hamatim akokaloisam, the people who incline towards the crookedness, meaning Rashi says, so you have the Talmud Chacham has done something where now somebody is inclining the scale, somebody is tipping over, somebody is taking and mentioning what the Talmud Chacham did wrong and trying to tip the scale on the Talmud Chacham towards the side of Choyva. The pasuk continues, Yelichem Hashem es Poyalei Oven, Hashem will lead such people together with those who do evil, meaning to Gehenim. Shalom HaYisrael. What is that last part? Shalom HaYisrael means Afilu B'Shosh Shalom HaYisrael. Even when there is shalom on the Jewish people, which means, first of all, the Talmud Chacham himself has passed away, and he's going to shalom. The Gemara in Ksubas tells us that when a Talmud Chacham, that when a tzaddik passed away, the Malachim will come and greet him and tell him, Yavo shalom, and then Boi b'shalom, and other such expressions. So therefore, so the Talmud Chacham is going to shalom. So even when there's shalom on Israel, and even also the other explanation that Tosfos says is even, so we're talking after the Talmud Chacham has passed away, somebody speaking badly about him is not going to cause machloikas. Nevertheless, even at that time, so even when there's shalom on Israel, afilu b'shalom, shalom on Israel, yelichem Hashem es poyalei oven, somebody who speaks badly against the Chachamim is going to wind up together with the poyalei oven. Kol Shekhen, if he speaks good about them, then he'll end up in a good place. But also, Kol Shekhen, if he speaks about them while they're alive, which can create machloikas, then that's all the worse. But Marashah also points out, besides that the word mahamatim, like Rashi is saying, means to incline, like a person is trying to tip the scale towards the side of Choyva, also the word matim is related to the word mitah. So therefore, it means v'amatim. So you have the Talmud Chacham is on his mitta after he's passed away, and akalkaloisim. Somebody is speaking about that he acted crookedly. Then we have the rest of what the Gemara is doubting. So in this connection, the Gemara says Tanan Ve Rabbi Shmuel. We learn in a brisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, Imra Isa Talmud Chacham Sha'over Aveira Balayla. If you see a Talmud Chacham who did an Aveira at night, Al Taharet Achav Bayoyim. Don't start thinking about him and questioning him by day and thinking he must have done something bad and he did something bad and therefore we should start thinking, is he really what he pretends to be, etc. Shema also tshuva, because he may have done tshuva between the night and the daytime. What do you mean, maybe? If he's a Talmud Chacham, he for sure did tshuva. Elavadai also tshuva. No, that's what it means. Between then and now, he for sure did tshuva. There is in fact a Chassidish Avot on that says also that the story involved with that, I don't remember what tzaddikim were involved in the story, but the gist of it is that one of them visits another and he sees he doesn't seem to be learning Torah at the time. He seems to be just sitting there not doing anything. And afterwards he explains that it means that at that time he was being Mahara B'tshuva, and therefore the vote is if you see a Talmud Chacham Balayla, Sha'over Aveira Balayla, that you see at night, but he doesn't seem to be sitting in front of a sefer, he's not learning, what is he doing? Just wasting his time. Al Taharet Achav, Sha'ela Vadei Osa Tshuva, you can be sure that at that particular time, at night, when you saw him seeming to do nothing, at that point he was actually being Mahara in Tshuva.
Don't judge,
basically. What?
Don't judge.
Yeah, don't judge, yeah. So the Gemara says, Omar Rabba, Loya Moran, Ella, Uva, Hani Mili, Bidvorim, Shibigufoy. Now that only applies if you see the Talmud Chacham did something with his goof. So then you should, so even though, so you have to be done the past course to begin with. But even if you see something that, that seems to be a blatant avera, nevertheless you can assume that he did tshuva as soon as possible. But if it involves something with money, then we don't say that. Then you have to see that he actually returns it to the owner who's supposed to have it. We're not even talking about like if the guy blatantly steals. If he does, he doesn't deserve the title Talmud Chacham anyway. We mean one of those things where you have to do l'fnei mishuras hadin, or one of those things where it's questionable or whatever. So still, he can't just get away that he did tshuva, because after all, we know that tshuva, when it comes to dinim mamonos, when it comes to things ben adam l'chaveiro, involves that you have to repay the other guy and ask him mechila. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yavdalav Cheshvin. So we started talking about yesterday the idea that the question of how it is that our Dor Yosim is going to adapt to be Zericha to the Geula. So he said that yesterday that Evan brought the point about the midget on the shoulders of the giant. So now that Evan says another reason is because there are certain areas in which our Dor specifically has a Maila, especially when it comes to our power of Mesidus Nefesh and Kabbalah So. And it explains in Chassidus when the Pasuk says that Moshe was very, very humble, Mikola Adam, Asher al Pnei Adam, more so than any other person on the face of the earth, it means not just more than, it means because of the people on the face of the earth, meaning that his main omnivorous was relative to the last generations, especially the generation of Ikbas and Meshicha, that the world is such a dark world and was still Osik and Torah and Mitzvahs with Mesiras Nefesh and Kabbalah Soil, and that overawed even Moshe. Continuing on halachas of brachas of things from Chameshus Minei Dagon. So we were talking about the various details of eating pasta bob kistin, and if you ate a certain amount that you have to wash, etc. So what happens if you originally planned this? Actually, somebody asked this yesterday, so here we go. We have the halacha. So if somebody planned originally to eat only a little, and then he said mizonis, later on he decided to eat it to be a soda. So let's say pizza, for example. You decided to begin with, you're only going to eat one slice. So you made a mizonis on it. Now you decided after the one slice, you want another one. So then, if what it is the amount you're going to eat now itself is not a kviyas suda, only if you combine it together. Like in this example, you're going to eat a second slice. The second slice by itself is not a kviyas suda, only if you combine them together. Then you eat it, and then you say birchas hamazon afterwards. You don't at that point wash and make hamotzi. You eat the second slice, and then you make birchas hamazon. But if what you're going to eat all by itself is a kviyas suda, so let's say you're going to eat two more slices, then you have to wash at that point and say hamotzi for what you're going to eat. You wouldn't say an alamichia for what you already ate, because it'll even start off with what you already ate, and it'll be part of Birkas HaMazon. In the Siddur, in Hilchas Birkas HaNenin, the Alter Rebbe says, really, the better thing in that case, to avoid any kind of suffix, is make the bracha alamichia on the first slice, let's say, then wait a little bit, then wash and make a motzi, and then eat your kadeh sphere and bench, as long as, again, you're eating at least four kadeh.